Hello and welcome to this session of What Does the Bible Say? I'm your host, Dr. Wayne Davis of Creekside Messianic Fellowship in beautiful Jasper, Georgia. We hold our services at 1191 East Church Street every Friday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. and every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 12:30. What we do is we take a book of the Bible and we go chapter by chapter and verse by verse to see what does the Bible say. So if you join me in Bible study this morning, if you just please open up your Bibles and let's look at it and see what does the Bible say. If you join me in Bible study today, please open up to the book of Revelation. Frequently I hear people say revelations. Have you heard that? There is no S, it's revelation. There is one revelation. Revelation means the revealing, the unveiling, the setting free, and letting somebody know something. It's the revelation of whom? Who's being revealed? Yeshua, our Messiah, is being revealed as the Messiah, the Lord, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. But wasn't he already revealed to Israel back in the first century? Yes, but this revealing is to the entire world. When this revealing is done, the entire world will know that Yeshua is the Messiah, the only begotten Son of God. He is the Word from the beginning. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God, says John 1:1. So this is the revelation. It's like opening up the veil. How did the Apostle Paul describe us? As right now we see through a glass darkly. We have a dim view, a limited understanding. But this is going to rip open the curtain and reveal the Lord in all his majesty, his power, and his glory. As we tend to do when we start a book, let's talk about the background of it. First of all, who wrote Revelation? Was John, the son of Zebedee, the guy who wrote the Gospel of John. In 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, he was one of the 12. Not just one of the 12, he was the youngest of the 12. He was one that was very close to Messiah. He was a cousin of Messiah. They knew each other from the time John was born. John was a lot younger. This is not John the Baptist. This is John, the son of Zebedee. Now, there are a lot of Christian scholars who say, nah, John didn't write Revelation. You realize that? Because they say it's written in an entirely different style than the book of John in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. We're going to talk about why the style is different. It doesn't mean it's a different author. It's an entirely different kind of book. But just for the record, are there any of the early what are called church fathers who assure us that John, the son of Zebedee, wrote this book? Answer is yes. They're Justin, Irenaeus, Clement, Origen, Tertullian, and Hippolytus. They all tell us that it was universally accepted that John, the son of Zebedee, wrote this book. But who was the big detractor early on who said, couldn't have been? Eusebius, who was the official church historian for the Roman Catholic Church. Does the book of Revelation say anything bad about the Roman Catholic Church? A lot. And that's why Eusebius, who is the official church historian for Constantine, the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, who was the pope of the Roman Catholic Church, had to say, it couldn't have been him, because this can't be an authentic book. As we study through the book of Revelation, we will find out why the Catholic Church does not like this book. Never have.
That would have been several hundreds of years later than...
Yeah, that would have been the 4th century.
Justin and those guys.
Yeah, Justin, Irenaeus, Clement, Origen, Tertullian, Hippolytus were in the 2nd and 3rd centuries, the early 3rd centuries. So long before Eusebius wrote. But sometimes when you see negative comments on like the authorship of a book, you need to say, what would somebody's motivation be to want it to be somebody else? And that's what it is here. So why is the language in Revelation different from the Gospel of John or 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John?
It's prophecy.
It's a different kind of book. Not only is it prophecy, but there is a subcategory of prophecy called apocalyptic literature. And this is apocalyptic literature. Apocalyptic literature is prophecy, but instead of using poetry to describe what's going to happen in the future, it uses symbolism. And you have to understand what the symbols mean. It's very difficult to understand the text.
And John was like, what, 40 years older and nearing the end of his life when he wrote this, too.
Yeah. We haven't gotten to when it was written. It's written in the middle of the 90s, 95 to 96 AD or Common Era. John's on the Isle of Patmos. We'll get to all that. So many years have passed. But the point is, it's apocalyptic literature, so it's symbols. That does not mean that John didn't write it. It just means it's a different class of literature. There is something that is common between the Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, and the book of Revelation, and that is the remarkable use of what's called antithesis. Antithesis. Y'all looking at me like, what in the world is that? That's what I call like the light switch, the on versus the off. You've got one or the other, you can't have both. And all of John's writings make a marked use of antithesis. Like the power of God versus the power of the world. Can you walk in holiness while walking in sin in the world? You can't. John is very clear on that. Light versus darkness, truth versus a lie. These are things that are common to the writings of John. John wrote it on the Isle of Patmos. The Apostle John was exiled to the island of Patmos because of his faith. The emperor of the Roman Empire required everyone to worship him as God, and John said, not doing it. And that's why he got sent to the island of Patmos. Patmos is a small rocky island in the Mediterranean Sea, about 35 miles southwest of Miletus. I'm sure that helps everybody. Just think off the shore of Turkey, about 35 miles. During the time of the Roman Empire, God bless you, it was used as a place of banishment, much like the way my ancestors got here to the United States of America. England put them on a boat and said, we don't want you here in England anymore, get over to America. And this is what Patmos was used for in the Roman Empire. We don't want you around here. We don't want you talking to people, spreading your faith, spreading your message, telling people about this risen Messiah, telling people that Rome is evil. So go to this little island, which didn't have a post office, didn't have any telephone lines or telegraph lines, and just shut up about it. So it's a place of banishment. It was written, like I said, in either 95 to 96 AD or Common Era, whichever term you like to use. So it's about 30 years after Peter, Paul, and most of the other apostles have died. And John tries so very hard in his Gospel of John and in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John to correct errors that he has seen creep into the church after the death of the other apostles. The purpose of the Gospel of John is different from Matthew, Mark, and Luke. The book of John, the Gospel of John's purpose is to show that Yeshua was not just a man, not just a Jew, not just a prophet, but he truly was divine in origin. And John is written around a series of miracles that a typical flesh and blood human being just can't do, to show the proof that God gives, the stamp of imprimatur he puts upon Messiah's ministry, that Messiah truly was the only begotten Son of God who came to this world to bring a message of hope, of peace, of reconciliation. It was written during the reign of the Emperor Domitian, D-O-M-I-T-I-A-N. And he was the one who said, worship me or die. And, you know, killing John would have been a really bad political move. That's why he banished him. So to whom was the book of Revelation written? Who knows?
Believers.
I hear to everybody. I hear to the world. I hear to believers.
To the world.
Yeah. First, there were seven literal physical churches in Asia Minor, which is what we call today Turkey, on the Roman mail road. And they're in order as they are around the Roman mail road. But it wasn't just for them, because in Revelation 2 and 3, at the end of each discourse to a particular church, it says, "Let him who has an ear hear what the Spirit says to the churches." So it was for seven literal physical churches back in the first century, but it was also for all believers throughout all ages. And that's why it's so important, because it takes the doctrinal errors that have started to creep into the early church after the death of the other apostles to say, you've gotten off track, we've got to get you back on track, or you're going to get snuffed out. I paraphrase. Those seven churches specifically are Ephesus. Ephesus is important because that's the one that John himself pastored. But as John goes away to the island of Patmos, the church begins to drift like the others. Then Smyrna, then Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and finally Laodicea. There are people who say that each of those churches describes a particular era during the church age, and that may well be true. One thing I can tell you is that they also characterize seven types of churches that exist in the world today. And the Lord wants us all to learn from the book of Revelation to repent and get back on track before the trumpet blows. Yes?
You know, something interesting I noticed about the early church fathers is they hold a very antinomian point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems like that's something that John was trying to address.
It absolutely is. The fact that somebody early in the church thought something does not make it right. And already, by the end of the first century, John is trying to correct grave errors that have crept in and that are still in the church today. The church, for some reason, has not responded to the book of Revelation to put its words into practice, and why we're going to talk about in just a few minutes. How does the book of Revelation relate to the Old Testament? You guys have already said you've got to understand the Old Testament to understand the book of Revelation, because the symbols in it are defined in the Old Testament. And there's too many theologians out there who say, well, let me assign a meaning to this. Let me look at the world today and say, well, you know, nah. The symbols are already defined. The Apostle John, it says, steeped in Old Testament truth, drew his concepts and symbols from Daniel, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Zechariah, Exodus, Jeremiah, and Joel. Yeah, all those things. And the book of Revelation does not quote extensively from the Old Testament, but there are 550 references to the Old Testament. 550. So is the revelation different from the Old Testament? No. Does it do away with the Old Testament? No. What it does is it explains a lot of symbolism in apocalyptic literature that people of old did not understand. Why do we have so many views of, is there a rapture? The majority of the church says no today. Majority of the church says no. Is there going to be a messianic kingdom? Majority of the church says no. Is Messiah going to come and rule and reign? The majority of the church says no. Why?
Because everybody finds a church that tells them what they want to hear.
Okay. That may be true. But I was thinking more that there are four main approaches to interpreting the book of Revelation. And the way you are taught to look at the book of Revelation is going to affect how you think about the book of Revelation, if you think about it at all. The first of the main interpretive methods is the historical method. So let me give you a moment. I can see you're taking notes. The historical method. The view of the book of Revelation from the historical method claims that the book covers the entire history of the church, picturing the antagonism of the forces of evil in the world against the church.
In other words, it's entirely non-literal. It's all about the church being persecuted by a wicked world. And that it's all been fulfilled. Yeah, the historical method says, yeah, it's all been done. In fact, you'll find a lot of people on the internet today teaching that, well, the first trumpet, that was World War I. The second trumpet, that was World War II. The third trumpet was the Korean War. And others say, no, 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 you got it all wrong. The first trumpet was this war back in the first century, in the second century.
Irving Baxter says.
Never mind Irving Baxter. Yeah, okay. So that's the historical method. This is not a book of prophecy. It's a book of history. It may have been prophetic when it was written, but from our point of view, all this stuff is done. That's not the majority view. That's a minority view. The majority view is number two, the preterist. P-R-A-E-T-E-R-I-S-T. That's the majority approach because this is the Catholic approach. And the Catholics make up, 95% of all the, quote, Christians, unquote, in the world. The preterist approach says the book of Revelation is about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem in 70 AD. It wasn't fulfilled over the past 2,000 years. It was 2,000 years ago. First problem I have with that is John wrote 25 years after the destruction, which meant he wrote a book of history. And the reason the Catholic Church takes that approach is the book of Revelation says some very bad things about the Catholic Church, which can't be true if it was fulfilled before the Catholic Church even came into existence. So that's why they take that approach, the preterist approach. The prophecies were fulfilled in the past in the confrontation of the church with the Roman Empire. Rome destroys Jerusalem, destroys the temple, persecutes Christians, feeds them to lions, etc. Book of Revelation's done. And from their point of view, there is no millennial kingdom. We are living in the kingdom right now. The world is full of peace and harmony. There is no evil. There is no bloodshed. There is no war. Animals don't hurt people. Does any of this sound real or realistic? No. But that's the preterist approach. The third one is the spiritual approach. The spiritual approach. That all the book of Revelation is an interesting account of how sin and evil, good and evil, will always be at war with one another. It has nothing to do with Messiah returning, establishing a kingdom. It's just that good and evil have fought from the beginning and they'll fight to the end. Which of those three approaches do you think I agree with?
None.
So there's got to be a fourth. The fourth is called the futurist approach. The futurist approach. It maintains that from chapter 4 on, everything in the book of Revelation is still prophecy of the future.
When you know, and but John said the things that happen, the things that are, and the things that are to come. So it tells you right there that at least part of it happens after the first century.
Yes, but most of these first three says, oh, but you're taking that too literally. That's why there is so much bad teaching in the world, because so many theologians have said you can't take the Bible literally. God didn't really create the heavens and the earth. They just evolved. He didn't really send his son to die for us on the tree. That's just a metaphor. No, it's not.
You can't nail a metaphor to a tree.
You can't nail a metaphor to a tree. That's absolutely true. So the four methods, the historical method, it's happened over the last 2,000 years. It's unfolded. And therefore, we're in the kingdom. And everything's great and rosy and wonderful. The spiritual approach that, what's that?
See, You didn't jump the preterist.
I did. I skipped the preterist approach for a reason.
Okay.
The spiritual approach, that it's just the ultimate conflict of good over evil. So the Bible is just as relevant as Dante's Inferno, which I never read, but it's got a really cool title. But the preterist approach, that the book of Revelation was fulfilled back in the first century with the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, and then Rome's turning its ire against the Christians, just doesn't stand up. So when I teach, I'm not going to teach. Now, if you were a spiritualist, you would read this way. Historicist, you'd read it this way. I'm not going to do that. That'd be too confusing. I'm going to tell you right up front, I use the futurist approach, and that's the way I'm going to read and teach it.
Anyway.
Yes, somebody's out there?
Yes, is the spiritual method also called amillennialism?
No, amillennialism is a theory that says there will not be a millennial kingdom.
Okay.
It's allegorical?
Spiritualist is allegorical, yes. An allegory of good versus evil. Okay. So what's the purpose of the book? The first purpose, according to the commentators, is to encourage believers. Absolutely. When the life gets tough, the going gets tough, if you can focus on the fact that there is a judgment day coming, it will help you stay on the straight and narrow. Because there may be a day, one of these days, that somebody puts a sword to your throat and says, renounce this Yeshua guy or die. It may happen, even here in this country. Mm-hmm. It could happen. And if it does, what happens if you renounce Messiah? Then you trade a few years in this physical mortal body for an eternity in the lake of fire, which is an awfully bad move. Number two, to explain a lot of the symbols that are recorded in Daniel and Zechariah and other places that people struggle with. You guys all know, I think, that the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw in Daniel chapter 2 with the head of gold, chest and arms of silver, belly and thighs of brass, and two legs of iron represents four kingdoms down through history, right? Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. But what about the bear chewing on ribs and rams with how many horns? And there's 10 horns that grow up, and then there's an 11th one, and then three get overthrown. Those kind of symbols are explained for us in Revelation. And that's helpful. One of the last things I want you to know is that the style of the book is in symbolic language. It's called apocalyptic literature. I mentioned that before. It can only be understood if you understand the symbols and figures from the Old Testament. So if you take the approach, we're a New Testament church, the Old Testament is irrelevant, let's start interpreting the symbols by how we think they should be, you'll never ever get there. That's the Irving Baxter approach. Lion, let's see, who in the world today has a lion on their flag? England, so the lion must represent England. No, it does not. And the wings are mad. You just don't get me started there. Is this the only book of apocalyptic literature? I would say yes. It's the only book that's exclusively apocalyptic. I should have thrown that one in there. But there are other books that contain apocalyptic chapters. Isaiah chapters 24 to 27 are apocalyptic. Isaiah chapter 65 and 66. And of course, Isaiah 24 to 27 is about the earth reeling to and fro like a drunkard. Also includes the rapture and the resurrection in Isaiah 26. Isaiah 65 and 66 are about the second coming of the Lord, and it uses apocalyptic literature, whirlwinds and such things. Then you have Joel chapter 2. Joel chapter 2, verses 1 to 11. There are trumpets blowing. Which trumpets? What do they signify? Well, the first trumpet in verse 1 signifies the rapture and the resurrection, the beginning of the day of the Lord. And then later we have the last trump that symbolizes the end of the tribulation period and the battle of Armageddon. And also Zechariah chapters 9 to 14. Chapter 12, Jerusalem is going to be like a cup that makes the other nations reel like drunkards. Zechariah 14 is the Battle of Armageddon. And the scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark where the bodies dissolve as Messiah returns. And then, of course, in the book of Daniel, you have many chapters in Daniel that use horses, that use other animals, that use horns, that use statues. That's apocalyptic literature. All apocalyptic literature is prophecy. Not all prophecy is apocalyptic. Traditional prophecy uses poetry. Apocalyptic uses symbols. And always it uses prose, not poetry. I would say so. Because what are the... Yeah, we know. That would be too much fun. Okay, let's look at Revelation chapter 1, verse 1. These are out of order. Let me fix it if I can. Okay, the revelation. Again, it's not plural, it's singular. The revelation. The word revelation in Greek is apocalypsis. Apocalypsis. It means the appearing, the revealing, like drawing back the curtain of a play and you see the stage clearly for the first time. Before that, how many of you sat out in the audience and you look at the little feet underneath the curtain and you try and guess what's going on? When they open the curtain, then you see the full scene. That's what the Lord's going to do. He's going to open the curtain. The revelation of, this word of means both about and from. It's got both meanings. It's about Messiah. It's from Messiah. The revelation of Yeshua. Yeshua means what? It means salvation. Salvation of mankind. We've talked about it before. It's a Hebrew word. It's a noun. It's a name, which is a noun. And it's a gerund. Gerund. It's a participle used as a noun. A participle means ongoing action. Ongoing action. And it's a passive participle, meaning we can't save ourselves. Only He can save us. And to go from the verb save to the noun salvation, you add the Hebrew letter vav, which is a letter from man. So it teaches that salvation came from God in the form of a man in flesh and blood to save we who cannot save ourselves. To be our redeemer, that is to pay the price that we owe, that we don't have the ability to pay. The Hebrew word for that is the goel, the kinsman redeemer. Has to be a near kinsman with the ability and the willingness to pay the debt for us that we cannot pay. And that's what Messiah did for us. The wages of sin is death. He took that penalty upon Himself so that you and I might live. The next word in Greek is Christos. It is the Greek equivalent of Mashiach or Messiah, which means the anointed one. It means that all the Old Testament prophecies about the anointed one are about Yeshua, our Messiah.
Well, that's about all the time we have for today, folks. If you've enjoyed this Bible study and you want more information on what we teach, please go to our website at www.john1415.org, where you'll find all of our Bible studies for the past 3 or 4 years in MP3 format, organized by book. And we've covered just about every book of the Bible, so you can listen online or you can right-click on the link and download the file to your iPhone, iPad, or however you like to listen to your teachings. May God bless you. We'll see you next week.